Consumer Watch with Wendy Nola. Hello, Wendy lady.
Hello, Darren. Good to be with you again.
Consumer issues abound. And when this one jumped out at me, I was like, why can't wait until Thursday and we can speak to Wendy Nola about this one? So as it turns out, if you're in hospitality and you were hoping for a safety net, that is not the case. Insurance institutions have found a loophole.
They have found a loophole. They found a self-serving interpretation of the contagious diseases cover in the business insurance policies. Just for a little bit of context, Darren, business interruption insurance is not all created equal. So some of these restaurants and guest houses and hotels wouldn't have had anything but the standard fire and other sort of normal flooding, those sorts of calamities. But some had an extra sort of boutique clause that covered more unusual things. Among them, a clause that went something like an outbreak of an infectious or contagious disease occurring within 50 kilometers of the business, right? Now you'd think, well, that would cover just about every 50 kilometers is quite a radius. It would cover just about every restaurant or guest house or whatever that had to close down as a result of the lockdown on midnight March 26th. But the insurers, the big guys, are saying, no, this was never intended to cover a pandemic. If it was, the cover would have been unaffordable because we were so at risk. So no, only if your business closed down, so this would have to have been before March 26th, if your business closed down because or staff members or you as the owner was tested positive for COVID and the place had to be closed down. You can imagine being a guest house or a restaurant, particularly a guest house that still isn't allowed to open except for less than 5% of business, for those who were quarantined and for now very, very limited business travelers. You know, it's not enough to sustain them and their staff and everything else. Last week, our insurance broke ranks to the surprise of most people and revealed that since April, it's actually been honoring these business interruption claims. Their clause also said an outbreak of an infectious disease occurring within 50 kilometers of the business, but their CEO said no. In our view, they're covered, and if they had that clause in their policy, they covered. We need to get cash to the businesses with the right cover in place as soon as possible, said their CEO, Donny Mattia. We understand cash flow is king for small and medium businesses, and we're pleased if we could be of assistance. So yes, very nice marketing for our insurance, although they could have said something back in April. But what it's done is shown up the rest of the industry, right? So they're not looking so lekker. But I wanted to say, which was a very KZN angle, yesterday I attended a Zoom press conference hosted by Insurance Claims Africa, a company which has more than 7,500 claimants, people whose claims have been rejected, even though they had that contagious disease clause in their business interruption policy. And the Tourism Business Council was there as well. And they also had two affected hotel owners. And one of them was William van der Riet, who owns the Cathedral Peak Hotel in the Berg, which most of us KZN people will be familiar with. It's been run by and owned by that same van der Riet family for the last 81 years. William van der Riet came on, and along with Meg Farger, who owns the Budmarsh Country Lodge in Magaliesburg, and they were both, I have to say, almost in tears. It was so hard to watch. William said the tragedy is that this could actually mean the end of the hotel. He said financially, the overheads, he was very candid because he was asked very specific questions by the journalist. The overheads are 800,000 to R1 million a month, but they've got nothing coming in, not 1 cent. But they still have to pay medical aids, URF, security, insurance premiums, ironically. He said, yes, there were some payment holidays, but they're all the payments are kicking in now. We don't have an income. We don't know when we'll have an income. We lie awake at night wondering where the next money is going to come from. I've put my personal money into the business, he said. We owe 7 to 8 million rand and we have maxed out our credit. We can probably survive another month, maybe 6 weeks. So I honestly can't say where to from here unless we get help. And if you think that that story has been replicated in hundreds, if not thousands of other establishments around the country, it's them, their staff. Their staff come to them and say, help us. And they literally are, they're back against the wall. It was such a moving thing to watch. So Ryan Woolley, who's the CEO of Insurance Claims Africa, says and these companies involved are Bright Insurance, Santam, Old Mutual Insurer, Guardrisk. Ryan Woolley says in their view the claims are being unfairly rejected by saying that the pandemic or pandemics in general were not an insurable event. He says the policy wording did not exclude a pandemic, and they expect the court to agree. So they're trying to put together, without going into too much detail, some kind of class action, because there are various groups of attorneys that have lots of other rejected claimants under them, guest houses, restaurant owners. There are even a few other beauty salons and those kind of operators as well who weren't able to open. And they're saying, we implore the board and the shareholders of those insurers to take a long, hard look at themselves and ask, should we be doing this? They're saying they must get their reinsurers to come to the party. And they're also saying, we understand that if they paid every single claim in full, they would go bust. The quantum for those 7,500 claimants is 3.5 to 4 billion rand.
Yeah.
But they're saying we can compromise. We can accept them imposing limits, saying, okay, we're only going to pay out for 3 months. Or say, we're going to pay you a lump sum now to save you, and the rest over time. We said, but they're just saying no, and they're digging their heels in. So this is a story, Darren, that's shaping up to be one
massive class action.
Hell of a story. Yes, and the implications are so massive because, as you know, they said, this is not just the hotels themselves. The value supply chain is absolutely massive. It's all the suppliers, so, you know, the food suppliers, the smaller fresh produce suppliers that supply these hotels and guest houses in the more rural areas. It's all, they fund schools, they, you know, you can imagine. And then all the interior decorating industry, the you know, the linen suppliers, it is a massive, massive industry. And these guys, the knock-on is, so in the next few weeks, most the next month, we're going to see a lot of movement here. And I think it's an important story for consumers to know about.
Now, I think, so if we do, it is, again, unprecedented times. You would really think that these people would be covered. The Cathedral Peak story is a microcosm of so many businesses in South Africa, the nation and the world. But the consumer point that I want to get to is, were we aware that that policies could be so subjective? I mean, you don't get more on the nose than if your business is 50 kilometers from an epidemic, you would be covered. You don't really get more on the nose than that. And yet the insurance companies seem to feel that they can interpret it that way. What degree of subjectivity do they have?
That's an excellent question, Darren Moore. And I think it goes to the heart of the kind of widespread traditional mistrust that consumers and sort of businesses, big and small, have about the industry and saying, you know, they'll do anything not to pay. What was particularly galling in this case was that when lockdown happened and the guys that were paying extra, and quite a bit extra, I have to say, for this business interruption insurance that covered contagious diseases, they must have heaved a sigh of relief and started putting their claims in. And the insurers didn't initially say no, and this is why this was never meant to be for a pandemic. They said, okay, fine. And through the brokers and whatever, yes, fine, submit this paperwork, your proof of earnings, okay, now submit that paperwork. In the case of Budmarsh Country Lodge, I think she said they were strung along for 6 weeks. William van der Riet said it was 3 months. Do this, do that, more hoops to jump through. And only then, finally, at the end of that exhausting process where hope was still sort of being kept alive, only then came the very blunt rejection. So I think initially, I think there was a lot of talks with their reinsurers who are based overseas. We don't see them, with they're pulling the strings. And I think they, when they realized, as lockdown dragged on and they realized how much money was involved, they then just said, right, you know, we're not paying. And that's when these hard, cold rejection letters went out.
They probably did the math and said a class action will cost us half or whatever. And
So I think some form of class action is inevitable if they don't come to the party. I must say, watching that press conference today was very, very hard. It was emotional, very raw. You could just really get a sense of what that industry is dealing with. The anxiety levels and depression must be off the chart. So as the CEO of the Tourism Business Council, Chifua Chifengwa, said, and he was also very emotional. He didn't pull his punches at all. He said, look, the business insurance claims have been rejected. The TERS payment, which are those temporary employer payments from government, they're coming to an end. The leisure hospitality within provincial borders is not allowed. You can only stay over somewhere for business. Yeah. He says, we are being put into a corner and something is bound to happen. He said, I'm starting to admire the taxi industry for the way that they make things happen. He said, we played by the rules, even when they've made no sense to us. But it's come to the point that we have to take drastic action. Something is going to have to give, and it's not going to be nice. It was that kind of a meeting, though, and it was really...
Wow. Yeah, well, for good reason.
Gloves off. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's what happens in the next month is going to determine whether the bulk of these establishments survive or not. Even if the restaurant industry, I mean, they're slowly able to trade, but very restrictively, no alcohol sold. I know your feelings on the matter, but for many, going to a restaurant and not being able to have a glass of wine with your meal is not appealing. And, you know, plus the social...
Well, you know what? I'm sure there's an old Durban trick where you would have your
wine in
a tumbler with a can of grape tizer next to it. And I'm sure that will peep up again.
Well, you know, the whole thing is the government saying you will not... drink on the premises. I feel that lots of can I take my own, can I do that, whatever. Yeah. But technically, that can't happen. So the restaurant's ability to get back to the pre-lockdown or pre state of disaster trading levels is very limited. Yeah. So but if something doesn't happen, something doesn't happen in terms of these claims being paid out or government stepping in with some kind of relief, which I think we know is not going to happen, then our landscape and these businesses and everything that they support are going to start to collapse and in a big way. This story bothers me so much.
Wendy, let me ask you a completely human question. With your consumer and journalism background, but you know, in light of the predicament we find ourselves in as a world right now, a completely human question, which is this. If we're led to believe the best science right now, and if we follow what has happened in the rest of the world, realistically, and with our numbers going up drastically in Gauteng, KZN will follow suit. The country is not looking
well. Is following suit.
On the Worldometer, South Africa has the fourth highest rate of infection on the planet. We're just behind. It's USA, Brazil, India, and now it's us. We're ahead of Russia in the infection, coronavirus infection rate.
Sounds like you are following it as obsessively as me, but yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
So here's the reality of it, right? The reality of it is we are only going to start peaking in about another week or two, and then that flattening of that curve is going to go on for quite some time. And if we're being completely pragmatic, and in the best case scenario, we could look at some semblance of a return to a normal as normal as we can get in about November.
That's very much best case scenario. Yes.
Okay, that's best case scenario. So we've been under lockdown from March, so it's April, May, June, July, August, September, October. We're looking at and maybe November. So we're looking at seven, eight months. What more can be done? People have to social distance. They have to stay away from leisure and travel. There is a global pandemic which kills people. It's out there. 500,000 people around the world are dead as we speak. And what is the best case scenario if, like, just you and me spitballing?
The leisure, it sounds perhaps frivolous to be worrying about the leisure industry, but the fact is that it contributes a huge amount to the fiscus, and it supports so many people in this country, and some of them in far-flung areas where there isn't much else going on in terms of job opportunities. So we need to support them, balance the lives with livelihood thing, I'm very much following the science, and I'm very much for, don't be idiotic like so many Americans have been, that's caused their numbers surge. But I would say certainly, and I'm going to do this, is in a way that's comfortable for me, start supporting restaurants and local lodges and whatever as soon as is legally possible. Because, yes, they're going to take a while to struggle back, but we want them there in 5 to 10 years, don't we? We don't want to do without the industry. And I just think, you know, for not just them as individual business owners, but for the whole, you know, ecosystem that they support, we owe it to them. And for ourselves, ultimately, as a country, we can't let them go down. There's just too many people's lives, too many families that are at stake here. So, I mean, the only way I can answer that is to say, you know, balanced lives versus livelihoods, and do what works for you to get back to supporting these businesses who have been at the forefront of the brunt of COVID-19, and for longer than any of us imagined. Do you know what I mean? I think 3 weeks, even 6 weeks, 2 months, fine. But we're in July now, and this is just untenable. It's my personal view. I'll put it out there. But looking into the faces of those people and listen to them talk about what their staff members and their suppliers. I mean, the one woman said, these big companies just really don't give a jot. They're sitting back in their ivory towers and saying, no, we're not. No. Some of their suppliers, the laundry business that does their laundry and the people that do the security said, you know, the laundry person said, pay us when you can. We understand. And the security guy said, can you just pay the salary of our security guy? You don't have to pay any profit for us, just our bare costs. It'll be fine. And so these small players, companies are revealing themselves in this pandemic, in this crisis. And that's the theme that you and I have been talking about a lot, is people companies, big and small, are showing what they're made of. So now it's time, I think, the companies that have the wherewithal, these big insurers, we don't want them to go under either, but compromise, pay some. Don't you say, no, we're not. It's not the time for those hardline, you know, hard nose. We need to compromise. So let's see what happens. I'm really, really crossing all fingers and toes that common decency prevails and that these businesses can be saved.
You see, my thinking on this is, like, you can take the restaurant scenario as a microcosm of all the other ones. And so much of our shrinking middle class is linked to the social or entertainment or tourism industry. And that has been completely obliterated. And whatever semblance of a middle class we had has been, you know, destroyed. So I understand a desire to get those wheels kind of turning again. But if you bring, we're forgetting the human element. And our government said to us, okay, guys, restaurants are open again. Let's social distance. Let's not sell alcohol, because alcohols in restaurants prove that people socialize, they get close, they spread the virus. So let's leave the alcohol out. Let's have some distancing. Let's try and support the local businesses. Maybe, you know, there's some transport businesses that can do well. There's the waitering and the cleaning department and the whole knock-on effect of it. And literally overnight, the sheer number of people who behaved like Florida or California in light
Texas.
Of all the numbers, which could literally be instrumental in the numbers being as high as they are right now, have behaved in a way it doesn't make it feasible. In an ideal world, you would say, okay, guys, these are the rules. Travel only in your pods. Take only your family. Support these small businesses. Social distance. Wear your mask. But we don't. And when the government said to us, it is all in your hands right now. We've done everything that we can to protect you and prepare ourselves. And now it's in your hands. And the fact how we are dealing with it in our hands is not admirable. We were asking our government to be nannies for us, but we're the ones who are behaving like toddlers and spreading this virus and making it impossible for us to get to any semblance of normal.
Well, what can I say but well said? I mean, our health minister, William Keyes, he posted a really moving thread on Twitter on Tuesday, and he ended by saying he was talking about the alarming spike in Gauteng with KZN not far behind, and of course Eastern Cape. And he said our biggest, it was a very long thread, and his last one was, our biggest challenge is to make people understand and play their part. Yeah. That was it, almost verbatim. Exactly what you're saying. It's not a big ask, really, when you consider what we went through in lockdown level 5.
Yeah.
Is just be sensible and don't wreck it for everybody. So, I mean, all we can do as journalists is repeat the message and hope that enough people take heed to prevent disaster. But, you know, already yesterday on one of the, another radio station, the day before, Mkhize was saying, sure, Gauteng, we might have to go into another hard lockdown 5. So it is in our hands to a large extent. And what else can we say? Just do your bit for everyone's sake.
All right. So that's nice to hear your perspective. And obviously coming from a journalist and consumer angle, that's, you know, invaluable. And also, did we cover enough about TERS? I don't know if you wanted to say anything more about that.
I shouldn't laugh. It's just the way you said it. So the temporary TERS. It sounded a bit like something else. It's the temporary, you're putting me on the spot now, temporary employers. It's basically a form of UIF paid by the government via the employers as temporary relief for those who couldn't work because of, you know, their businesses shut down, whatever, during lockdown. But as the Tourism Business Council pointed out, those are coming to an end now, those who were lucky enough. And it wasn't full payment, by the way. It was like a third or something. So it wasn't, you know, it didn't do the trick.
It didn't give you an opportunity to put something away for next month.
No. And it didn't even, in most people's cases, they couldn't even cover all their debit orders. But anyway, it was something. But that's over now. So that's what he was saying. Everyone's backs are just now firmly against the wall in the hospitality industry, particularly in guest houses that are barely doing any trade at all until they open up leisure. And so it's desperation with a capital D. It is now, as I say, next month is showdown. So much rests on what happens in the next few weeks. And I hope as we chat successive Thursdays that I have some good news to talk about. We have some good news to talk about on that front.
Let's hope so.